Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is February 12th, 2016. And on today's show, I'm happy to welcome back writer, web designer, and ACIM teacher, Bruce Rawls. Now, during the last few weeks, we have been exploring some of the early workbook lessons. So this week, Bruce and I decided to focus on the idea of holiness, which we find as a continuing theme in workbook lessons 35 through 39, which are, my mind is part of God's. I am very holy. My holiness envelops everything I see. My holiness blesses the world. There is nothing holiness cannot do. My holiness is my salvation. Now, this is such an important theme throughout the course, and one that is so, so easy to misunderstand and to misuse, especially if we're not carefully considering the entire context of the lessons and reading along with the text as well. Because instead, what we tend to do is we'll latch on to one of these phrases and we'll pull it out and we'll use it as we see fit. Now, unfortunately, it's usually our ego self that is pulling out one of those phrases and using it as a mantra. There is nothing my holiness cannot do. You can hear it, can't you? And in effect, using that as a defense against hearing and seeing the truth of who we really are. So this is kind of a complex topic, but on the other hand, it's very simple. But it's an idea that I thought would be really worth addressing and talking about. Because like I said, we read these and we either automatically have a defense against it. Like, what do you mean I'm holy? I'm not holy. And when we really look into ourselves, we would admit we don't feel very holy. But we go to the opposite extreme and then we grab onto these things. You know, there is nothing my holiness cannot do. So I think this is going to be an interesting discussion. And if nothing else, I would encourage all of our listeners and those of you who are students of A Course in Miracles, this is the time that you remember to pay attention to the entire context. You know, don't just pull these words out. Don't just read the label. Don't just read the title of a lesson and say, hey, I know what this means. Because so often we don't have an inkling of what it really means. And so it's important to just read it and think through it. And I know for myself, one of the things I like to do is I have a copy of what's called The Journey Through the Workbook with Ken Wapnick. It's something that I purchased through the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, which is that website that we're often referring to, www.facim.org. They have an online bookstore and I love purchasing what they've got. And I not only have it in written form, what Ken wrote about the lessons, I also have it on CDs, some lectures, some workshops, and you've heard many of those during the show. Well, see, that really helps me because I'm going along thinking I really understand what this lesson is saying, and it helps to have somebody else come along and say, hey, let me walk through this with you. So that's why I really depend on Ken to do that, and also my friends like Bruce. So let's get Bruce on the phone and let's get going. And while you're listening to the show today, remember that you can always join us in our private group on Facebook, which you can get to if you go to our website. Remember, we have a website. It's 12radio.com. And on that website, that's where you're going to find the On Demand, which is your way of listening to archives. It's also where you're going to find the complete schedule for 12 Radio. But you're also going to find a link that takes you to Facebook where you can interact with us during the show. So I hope that you will do that. So welcome, Bruce. Good morning, Your Holiness.
Hi, CA. First off, I want to say thank you again for having me on your program. And thank you also for so eloquently prefacing this conversation with a very lucid and clear-headed and insightful commentary to start off this hour, and you said a lot there. So I probably should have been taking notes, but I really liked how you set this up, and it really is an important topic, and it really is at the crux, at the heart of what A Course in Miracles is about, and we do need to take, you know, the entire workbook and the entire course holistically, you know, pun intended with the connection with the word holiness in in context. And that context really is the context of the non-dual metaphysics. And the non-duality, of course, is really the only way that our holiness works. Because if we try to separate out any part of it, which is what our ego always strives to do, however, you know, cleverly or clumsily, it seems, that strategy that we've all adopted, otherwise we wouldn't be here and we wouldn't need this remedial curriculum, it basically just says, well, I'm going to pick out a part of this perfect oneness that on some deep level we know we are, but that perfect oneness is really the only basis for our holiness, our true holiness that is, and it's interesting because the word holiness really has a feeling to it that's different in some ways than wholeness, but I think that's because we've made those differences real. And ultimately, the wholeness is really the inseparability of spirit, of the infinite mind that we all are and that we are and have. I guess have is the other word I was looking for. So that it's that awareness that the perfect innocence and holiness that is at the heart of what we are only works when we look at it from the perspective of the thought system of total inclusion. And that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where our forgiveness classroom really kicks in, and we get to look at moment to moment the ways in which ego tries to sabotage that, tries to short circuit our awareness of that that real holiness, and tries to substitute with a fake holiness, which is usually a holier than thou or a better than, less than. I mean, it works either way. If we feel the least bit inferior or superior, or even different, even difference for goodness sakes, you know, makes us, you know, casts us out of the kingdom of heaven. That's basically, you know, to use that metaphor, that dashes the real holiness and substitutes ego's fake holiness, which is always, you know, a comparative thing, and that's it. Just never works for us. We know that. I think that's why the ego's strategy is like this you know, Pac-Man archetype that knows that it's in its fantasy only, in its hallucination only, has appeared to have separated itself off from perfect oneness, from the rest of the universe, from the rest of true creation, which has nothing to do with space or time. But we think we're these, you know, as Ken Wapnick says, you know, not too many course students would put a sign on the refrigerator, let alone over their front door and the porch that says, you know, welcome to the home of evil, darkness, and sin.
Right.
But that's in essence what we do when we buy into the ego's thought system, and we don't want to look at it that way. But I think it's the willingness to look at that, the willingness to look at our you know, the ego's willingness to be separate, and it's and that's really the only language it knows. It doesn't know oneness. It doesn't know perfect wholeness or holiness and perfect innocence, because it only knows duality. It only knows how to fragment and to see things as polarized and polarizing and separate and different and better and less than and victims and victimizers and all the other polarities that we can throw at it. Those are all the ego's realm. But the way we can undo it is we use that same illusion to undo the illusion. And so that's the way out of the labyrinth is to look at all the ways that we've made differences a big deal, and we don't have to go any farther than what's in front of our face. And that's why, again, you mentioned the early workbook lessons are so potent, because we just look around and see, oh, everything that is in my life, whether it's a receipt from a grocery store sitting in an in basket, or a paperclip, or a keyboard, or a pen, or, you know, just all those. I'm just looking around my office at the moment, and just anything that we happen to glance on, a picture of a friend on our computer screen, you know, it could be anything. And that those are the perfect subjects for us to forgive any shred or any scrap of belief and differences, and say to ourselves, this is my forgiveness classroom. This is how I bring back the oneness that I thought I gave away into my mind, and restore the real holiness that includes everyone and everything. And, you know, the alleged evil darkness and sin that Ken jokingly suggests that most course students don't want to look at, which is more than a joke, because we don't, is completely dissolved when we bring it moment to moment to the altar of our mind by just looking at the things that we have grievances about, the things that we don't want to forgive, the things that we want to stay upset about, and the things that we want to make big deals about. And those are the things that become our blocks to the real holiness that awaits us all. And I'm glad you mentioned the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, because they're so deserving of our support. I Sunday and Monday attended another of their online academy classes. You can go in person, of course, if you are in Temecula, California, or plan to visit there, and that's a great experience. I've only been to some of the shorter classes there, just the study group kind of meetings, but I know a lot of people, including Susan Dugan and some friends in Oregon, who've gone to the academy classes there, and they're just wonderful. And the staff there is picking up where Ken left off and doing it beautifully. And I want to, you know, give my kudos to their efforts there. They're just doing a fabulous job. The FACIM.org being the sister organization to ACIM.org. And so you can watch those. So anyway, just a quick, very short, you know, paraphrase summary of one of the many ideas they shared in this last 2-day academy class, the virtual streaming version that I attended, was the idea that if we can look at the treachery of the ego, look at the ego strategy for making differences a big deal, and watch. You know, the ego's reaction, of course, is horror and recoiling and in terror at the unholiness of the ego. But that's how we get back to the holiness. We have to look at what ego paints with this, you know, dark brush of evil darkness and sin. We need to just look at each of those grievances that take the form of a minor irritation or feeling bad momentarily that we spaced out on an appointment, or let's say, you know, a bodily affliction, or you know, a financial issue, or, you know, it doesn't matter. Anything that involves space, time, bodies, and certainly guilt. You know, that's why I love the acronym GIST for guilt, individuality, space, and time, as little trigger words for ego may be involved here. Those things are suitable subjects for bringing to the mind's altar and asking Holy Spirit, a.k.a. the Jesus of A Course in Miracles, a.k.a. our inner kindness teacher, to look at it with us, you know, shine that infinitely bright light on it, which dissolves our issue. But we have to be willing to, you know, reveal to ourselves, you know, what it is, and you know, the fact that we've invested in it. You know, any specific, and I just listed those sort of general categories of body, finances, relationships. You know, and there's you know, certainly countless others and variations of those. But you know, anything that seems to be something that we're dealing with, or frustrated with, or depressed about, or angry about, or whatever. I mean, just grab those thoughts, put them on the altar, and say, okay, let's look at this together, inner kindness teacher. And when we do that, the big dealness and the terror around it dissipates immediately. But we have to be willing to reveal to ourselves, you know, what the issue seems to be, and you know, that's why those early workbook lessons say, you know, bring those specifics to mind. Don't run, you hide from them. Just, you know, let's look at them together. Let's examine them and see how unfounded those issues are, and particularly the unfounded guilt, which is the opposite of the holiness, is. And that's how we get back to that holiness. And I love how Ken Wapnick says it's not a course in yes, it's a course in not no. We have to, you know, do the work. And it's only work from the ego standpoint, of course. It's actually a joy from
right
above the battleground where we really are. And because when it's kind of like anything that you dread doing and put off, you know, it's like, oh man, I you know, you think, I'm really not looking forward to this, you know, whether it's a dentist appointment or getting your taxes done or whatever, you know. But when you actually get into it, it's not that bad. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, and I think that's true. When we actually look at the shenanigans that the ego has contrived for us, that, you know, we're so invested in it, we don't even know that there's anything different than that for the most part. But when we actually look at it, we begin to have this objective peacefulness that says, oh, that wasn't a big deal. You know, if you pull apart any massive nightmare that the ego wants to throw at us and just look at one little, you know, scene in the movie reel, and you say, well, that's a prop, and that's fake blood, and that vampire, you know, is just an actor, and whether it's me or someone else, you know, and you know, and that Holocaust, that's just special effects, and that's in truth what we can say of all the things that happen in our three-dimensional life, even though we take it real, and it's a heck of a production, but it's a mask over our holiness. It's a mask over the spotless mirror that you know, we really can reflect the holiness that we are and have from our Creator. We didn't make it, but we all inherited it, and it's all the same. So anyway.
Right.
So I've been rambling on a bit.
No, it's been really good, but something you said reminded me of this, and I think, here again, it's such a production. It's, in fact, sometimes I think it's almost like a little kid. When you see a kid throw a temper tantrum, mm-hmm. and, you know, a lot of times I just step back and go, okay, are you done? No. let me know when you're done.
Right.
You often can't interrupt it. I mean, and especially with a very small child, mm-hmm. you know, there, you can't logic them out of it. So it's sort of like, okay, when you're done, then, you know, we're going to move on. But anyway, in one of these lessons, lessons 39, My Holiness is My Salvation, it's interesting because right up front, there's a line that says, like the text for which this workbook was written, the ideas used for the exercises are very simple, very clear, and totally unambiguous. And I really liked what Ken wrote about it. And I'm going to read a few things because he said, this is not what most students of A Course in Miracles believe about the text.
Uh-huh.
Because, of course, we think it's so complicated. You know, mm-hmm. there's just so much. And he says, what it makes it difficult to understand is not the language, not the blank verse or any other aspect of its form, but your unwillingness to understand. This is not intended as an attack or a condemnation, but simply as a means to help you understand why you find it so difficult to comprehend, let alone practice. As long as you have an investment in keeping your mind hidden, in keeping your body real, and your individuality paramount, you will find what this course is saying to be terribly threatening. Mm-hmm. You cannot understand A Course in Miracles without first letting it inside.
Yes.
And, you know, that it was kind of like some of the stuff you were saying. And, of course, the other thing I would reiterate is every single workbook lesson, no matter what it is of the 365, you're going to hear basically the encouragement, go back to your own behavior, go back to your own mind. That is your curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always look at whatever is in front of your face with your inner kindness teacher. That's all there is.
Yeah. That's it. You know? That's it. And that's all we need to do. And we don't have to tackle, you know, and that's another of ego strategy is to have us dread, this massive, tidal wave of future events that we can't predict. And you know, it paints those with a big fear brush. You know, it's like, well, gosh, how am I going to deal with this? And how am I going to cope with that? And, you know, what if this happens that I'm not even expecting? Well, that's part of the script. We wrote that into the script on some level we're not aware of, but you know, our signature, not the individual CA's signature and Bruce's signature, but the decision-making mind, you know, above all those levels of splitting, you know, made that decision to, I'm going to participate in this massive hallucination that I call 3D space-time. And I'm going to, you know, forget that I had any complicity with it, that I was responsible for making this up. But most importantly, I'm going to forget that it's made up.
Right.
It's going to be a big deal. I'm going to get so involved in it that I'm going to, you know, not even think that there's an option, that there's a vertical alternative in addition to all these horizontal, you know, pick among countless illusions. Well, maybe there's an illusion that leads out of illusion. And that's what the forgiveness classroom is. And that's the ladder in the middle that's surrounded by countless other, you know, rickety ladders the ego puts around the periphery for us to, you know, entices us to climb, and with the tip of the hat to Nuke Sanchez's partner, Tomas Vieira, who's no longer with us, who gave that metaphor in a previous workshop that I attended years ago. And I really like that, because it's like you've got all these ladders that ego, and they're all unholy ladders, but they can be disguised as holiness. But
they're going all different directions.
Exactly. It's a holiness of differences. It's a holiness of distinctions and exclusion and oh, well, this person's holy and these group of people holy and this nation is holy and this, you know, political party is holy, but I'm not so sure about the rest, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, when I think about this holiness too, I mean, truly, when I read these, this time I just kind of had a smile, you know, as I was reading these particular lessons. And as an astrologer, I would kind of like to bring it back to Leo. Uh-huh. And I say that because Leo, of course, is an incredible sign that is ruled by the sun, uh-huh. You know, the center of the universe. And so Leos are the personality of having, I think they're the most generous, the most affectionate, the most light-bringing people. I mean, they're the ones, they're dramatic, they entertain us, uh-huh. They make us smile. They're, you know, they're just warm people that can literally light up a room.
Magnanimous,
however,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And yet here's what happens though. A Leo, usually a lot of times people, you know, have a bad feeling about Leos, or when they do, it's because Leos can be very ostentatious and they can be, I have to be the center of attention and it's all about me, 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 me. And no matter what they're doing in a conversation, they will always bring it back to themselves. And so people say, oh, Leos, they're just so egotistical. They're just so self-centered. The irony is, when a Leo is that way, it's because they're insecure. Mm-hmm. And you can, I mean, that's just, you know, you can take that to the bank. When a Leo acts ostentatious rather than acting generous and warm, it's because they themselves are so afraid. They're so afraid that they are not what they want to be, that they're empty, that they are the orphan child, that they are not loved. You know, all those fears that, you know, and here again, take this as an archetype for ourselves. When we feel that, then we come up with all the bravado. And so it's just ironic. And I mean, of course, we know that. We've known that since grade school. You know, the kid who's acting all blustery like that is usually the most insecure one. And so when I was reading these holiness ones, I thought, it's the same kind of thing. That ego goes, yeah, look at me and my holiness. And even the Course in Miracles is telling me how holy I am, without ever recognizing that's exactly, in a sense, what Jesus is trying to tell us. You are so incredibly holy if you look at who you are, but it's not about your body and it's not about this world you've created.
And it's not, you know, not about your personality either.
It's not about our personality,
yeah,
but it's
exactly.
Like, we so do not want to hear that. We want to defend against that, you know, with everything we've got.
My story is important.
That's right. My story.
Yeah. And those astrological archetypes is a good metaphor too, because each one of those is like a spoke of a wheel, and each of those spokes in isolation, you know, is basically what we're talking about. That's the holiness of distinction, the ego's fake holiness, where this like, oh, I have attributes that you don't have. And so therefore, you know, I'm better or worse. Doesn't matter. Either way works, you know, to for ego's dysfunctional working anyway, to achieve the goal of separation. And so each one of those signs is again, a way, as you well know, to bring back into oneness or to further the separation, because any archetypal system, whether it's astrology or you know, what's the one with the Enneagram, you know, just uh-huh. any of those can be used as a tool for reinforcing the belief in separation or for bringing, you know, back into oneness the various things that we fragmented and projected from the mind.
Yeah,
depending on
our defense systems.
Exactly.
The motivation.
And interestingly enough, I was born not far from ostentatious myself. So.
Oh, were you? You know, I don't think I've even ever seen your chart. Do you realize that?
I'll have to send it to you. But
you ought to send me your information and I'll calculate it. Yeah. Are you a Leo?
No, I have Pluto in Leo, but I was born not far from ostentatious in Bryan, Texas, actually. Anyway, I couldn't resist the pun. But the holiness then really has to do with just looking at our investment in our personal story, whether it's, you know, a natal chart or things that happened to me or whatever. But we can use those things. We can use every little bit of whatever archetypal system we might be studying or anything that we're involved in terms of our social life or you know, our family life or work life or, you know, the media that we enjoy, and just look at all that stuff and say, oh, here's an opportunity to see where I can either choose the ego's fake holiness of differences, or I can look at the opportunity to say, oh, can I respond out of kindness and out of a genuine recognition that shared interests are the only thing that's going to work, and just look at, and the way we get to that is by looking at the motivation in our mind that doesn't want to go there, that wants to maintain separate interests and wants to be me first, my story, my needs, my priorities, yada yada, and just gently laugh at that. And it doesn't mean that we necessarily immediately behave differently, but over time we tend to stop doing those maladaptive things on the level of form two. But that isn't what the curriculum is about. That's not what A Course in Miracles is suggesting that we do. It has nothing to do with behavior. Nowhere in there does it say do this or don't do that. But it does suggest that we look at our mind, and it's all about, and you know, if you read the text with the idea and the workbook and the manual with the idea that it's only addressing the decision-making faculty in our mind, then it starts to make sense. And then, like you were talking about the complexity that Ken was speaking of in those brilliant eight volumes of the Journey Through the Workbook, where he was mentioning, like you were saying, that you know, the objections we have to the seeming ambiguity and the language, and, you know, whether it's the Shakespearean blank verse and the iambic pentameter that the Course uses, or whatever, just, you know, the fact that it's written in a peculiar way that you know, you can learn to love, but the ego will use any opportunity to make differences a big deal, and so there's one difference. It's like, well, this isn't how I speak or write or whatever.
Right.
So it, you know, there's a way of making differences a big deal and dashing our awareness of holiness in that moment. So,
Bruce, you can't make me laugh.
Oh,
or
okay.
I will cough, you know, because I'm still recovering from my cold and my laryngitis. So you can't, I'm really trying not to laugh.
All right, I'll try to be serious.
No, I'm just joking. But okay. if you're making jokes and I'm being quiet, it's because I can't start laughing or I'm going to start coughing.
Okay.
And then my voice will be completely gone.
Okay. Oh.
So. But I know you are funny. We always laugh a lot together.
Oh, it's so helpful too, because if we take this crazy thing we made up seriously, you know, we're just basically saying holiness is a sham. You know, the real holiness that the Course talks about is a sham, because, you know, right off the bat, you know, it's well, I guess it's a fair ways into the toward the end of the text actually, where it says, you know, it's a tiny mad idea. You know, where the Son of God remembered not to laugh. We and that seriousness is really what dashes holiness in our mind and turns it into a sham, and turns it into a facade, because in those moments, the real oneness that we intrinsically feel with everyone and everything, because of the sameness that is the sort of the gateway drug to oneness, if you will. That's the sameness is how we get there, and we get to the sameness by forgiving our projections and seeing that we're all coming from the same place, we're all in the same boat, we're all, you know, fighting the same hard battle, as the famous philosopher's quote goes. It's the same thing, and we can afford to look at it gently and kindly and with a sense of humor.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I go back to also one of the things Ken remarks over and over in these particular lessons is Jesus is just gently trying to get us to remember that we have a right mind, which is what you were referring to before. We have all kinds of masks. We have all kinds of complications. We've got all these, you know, ladders going nowhere. And Jesus is just trying to get us to come back to, do you realize you have a right mind? That's where your holiness is coming from. You know, holiness doesn't mean you're going to walk on water. It doesn't mean you're going to heal the sick. It doesn't mean you're going to be out there doing these in the world considered miracles. You know, all I want you to do is remember that you have a right mind. And from that right mind flows your holiness and your power.
Exactly. And that right mind is really our connection to a peace that, you know, pardon the cliche, but really does, you know, pass understanding. You know, it transcends anything that we could have possibly experienced in this world that could reflect that quality to us, because that direct experience that is an unchanging experience, because it doesn't involve time, it's an eternal awareness, is so far beyond anything that we can imagine here, that we've gotten, apparently within our dream, so far down the rabbit hole, we've forgotten that that's available to us. And that's what these gentle reminders in A Course in Miracles lead us back to, is this persistent but firm, gentle, kind of nudge, nudge, nudge. Oh yeah, that's right. I could see peace instead of this. You know, I could choose the teacher of kindness. I could choose the teacher of peace instead of the pain and the loss and the suffering that come with, you know, apparently come with ego's choices, because we've so identified with those. We think that those are actual, you know, permanent things, but those come and go, don't they? I mean,
right.
The things that we thought were tragic, you know, and one moment, or maybe another decade later sometimes, but, you know, eventually they go away. And so anything that we think could be a big deal and holy in the ego's terms, has to be looked at and brought to the mind's altar for examination before we recognize that it's you know, an opportunity to say, maybe not.
Yeah, and you know, that's another concept that is throughout the Course in Miracles that I think psychologically is hard, because it almost flies in the face of, I think, our language and our thinking. Mm-hmm. And that is, we bring the darkness to the light. Mm-hmm. You know, bringing our frustration, bringing our anger, bringing our attitudes or whatever's causing any kind of distress, we bring that back to the inner altar and go, hey, take a look at this. You know, whereas in our culture, I mean, don't you think we're always talking about shedding light, bringing the light to the situation?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And psychologically, that's an incredible difference to, you know, that you're not going to drag Jesus into the dream.
Right.
You're not going to drag God into the dream saying, okay, bring your lantern over here and let's take a look at this. But rather, it's the opposite. We're taking our behavior and bringing it that way. And, you know, of course, there's a million examples, but I had one just this week where something happened. And one of my favorite illusions is I love to rail against unfair laws, you know. I mean, that's one of my favorites, you know.
Sure.
Whether it's the bank or the IRS or the government or whoever it is, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so something happened, and, you know, I was so tempted to all of a sudden fly into my rage. And I went, has that ever worked? Has that ever once worked for you? And I just said, no, you know. So I could feel myself, that's it, taking it to the altar and just going, you know, that never has worked. It hasn't worked on an inner level. It hasn't worked on a psychological level. It hasn't worked on an emotional level and on a physical level. It didn't work, you know? And so I said, so just do this. I had to pay a fine. And so it's like, just pay the fine and let it go. And also, but the other thing is I found myself wanting to, it was like in my mind, I was already gearing up for what I could tell other people. You'll never guess what happened to me and what, you know, and this unfairness. And I went, and you know what, CA, you're not going to do that. You are not going to repeat that story. And you are not going to defend how right and righteous you are and how unfair this was. Mm-hmm. You're just going to pay it and let it go. And that may be the first time in my life I was able to do that.
Cool.
You know, and even in my mind, when it keeps coming up going, well, you know, that was, and I go, no, we're not going there. You know, we are not going there. This is not, you know.
When you say not going there, I flashed on a favorite video that's I'm doing a brain fade on the comedian. I'll think of his name anyway.
Initials, just anything. I don't know.
It's
Stephen Wright.
No.
Stephen Colbert.
No, one of my favorites. But that's,
yeah, me too.
That wasn't who I was thinking of. This is silly. Anyway, he in this little skit he does. It's called Stop It. Let me just find it real quick here. It's because I'm feeling like I need to.
You need to be right.
Well, I want to share with the listeners this skit, which is fun. Bob Newhart. That's the name I wasn't thinking. Anyway, this wonderful little skit. If you put in Newhart into ACIMblog.com, which is what I just did, you'll find it. It's a wonderful little skit called Stop It. When you said we don't go there, that was one of the things at the beginning of this wonderful skit where he talks about, you know, we don't go there. But that's a good metaphor for ego does go there. The ego does try to, like you were saying, tries to drag the principle of perfect oneness, which is abstract. It's non-dual. It has no reference to anything specific. And in fact, the memory that we took into the dream helps us remember that it's not specific and that we're practicing level confusion, to use a familiar term to a lot of course students, when we try to do that. And instead, if we take our darkness to the light, as you were very eloquently saying there, CA, what we're doing is we're basically saying, I can afford to look at what my mind has concocted and just stop it. I can afford to to just not go there and to not indulge in that if I'm willing to look at it. And that's the crucial thing is being willing to look at it and bring our specifics and use them as our classroom in reverse of the ego's motivation to see how within that specific there's an opportunity to go to and bring it to the light where the issue is dissolved. And the peace that we really are and have transcends anything that we wanted to get mileage out of the specific with.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, can be really helpful. There was another thought in there, but I'll...
Well, if it comes, you can say it. But
it'll come back.
You know, what it did for me, that whole situation, is it just so reinforced, but I could laugh at myself. My total investment in being right, mm-hmm. my total investment in being an upright citizen. So do not impugn me for anything. You know what I mean? And it's sort of like, you know, so getting, what does it matter? Ultimately, if this is a dream, if this is an illusion, what does it matter? Why do I have to have such an investment in that? And it just, once again, brought it up mm-hmm. that I have an incredible investment in being right. But I could just kind of back off and just go, whoa. You know, anytime you think you've got this, CA, there's your proof. You know, you're still struggling, honey.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it was just one of those good lessons, but it was also a nice lesson because in the past, I wouldn't have been able to stop myself from going into a rage.
Yeah.
I just couldn't. And this time it was like, really? You're going to ruin your day over this, you know?
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden I went, no, I'm not going to ruin my day over this. And I mean, and it wasn't even just fake. I mean, that's the thing. You know, we talk sometimes about the genuineness of forgiveness. You can't fake it. And that's how that was too. It was sort of like I knew what it was like to really just go, I'm letting this go and just move on with my day.
Right.
And you know, I don't, it's one of those things, it's hard to say, but it's like, once you finally go, yeah, I mean, what the trigger was for me is when I really, like I said, took it internally and said, has this ever worked for you?
How's that working out for you?
And when I could honestly go, not good.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of like, okay, turn around and go another way this time.
Yeah.
And I was such, able to do it.
It is such a gentle awareness, isn't it? That prompts that about face and that 180 that we make in the mind that says, you know, that, like you say, this hasn't worked for me. I can afford to turn this around and to use ego's classroom or ego's prison, really, and take the same bricks that the ego was building into a taller, you know, a dungeon, or maybe a deeper dungeon, depending on which direction you're going with it, and use those same bricks metaphorically to build a brightly lit classroom where we take all the things that seem to happen to us that are really just projections of our own thinking on some level and bring them back to mind, own up to them, fess up to them, say, okay, yeah, I'm complicit, I'm responsible, I made this up on some level that I'm not aware of, but it doesn't matter. As long as I just take this specific thing that's happening to me at any moment and put it on the altar of the mind, forgive my investment in, you know, wanting to be upset or in any way less than perfectly peaceful, and the true holiness of that peace is compromised unless we do that, and unless we take the specifics and bring them to mind, let the Holy Spirit do its miracle instead of the ego's magic by undoing the investment. But it's our decision. That's why the willingness is so important. We have to say, yeah, I was willing to see that this wasn't getting me anywhere, like you say, CA. It's just willing to look at the fact that, you know, that strategy just hasn't been working for us.
Yeah. Well, and I think about, I love the movie Groundhog Day.
Oh, me too.
With Bill Murray. And, you know, to me, that is such a spiritual movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because you can change your life one step at a time.
Yes.
One day at a time. That's all it takes to actually change your life. But, you know, there's a perfect little illustration in there with the scene where he keeps, you know, stepping into that icy puddle every day.
Exactly.
And, you know, finally he figures out how to not step in the icy puddle.
Uh-huh.
You know, go a different way, cross the street.
Yeah. And I think we do the same thing every time we catch ourselves getting ready to, you know, get thoroughly invested in a grievance or, you know, whether it's an anger or a depression or an upset of any sort, and catch ourselves right in mid-step, like Bill Murray is the weathercaster Phil in that movie did, you know, just eventually he you know, stops himself before he puts up enough of his weight that he lands in the puddle. And we do that same thing by systematically being mindful and watching the ego's shenanigans, not condemning ourselves for them, but revealing the motivation to be miserable and releasing our investment in that and allowing the Holy Spirit to replace that investment with the peace and the holiness that really is behind that, that makes no one guilty, including our alleged separate selves. And then we have, like you say, then we avoid that puddle altogether. And
mm-hmm.
It's like, oh yeah, that works.
Yeah, because we could get all mad, you know, the city of Denver needs to come fix that puddle or whatever it is, you know, but
right,
it's like,
right.
It doesn't matter why it's there. It doesn't matter who is to blame. Just don't step in it.
Yeah.
Sidestep it. Make a different choice. Make a different decision.
And the way that seems to manifest is that we spend less and less time on those tangents, on those ego rants, and we catch ourselves quicker. And you know, at first it might be, well, I only spent 5 days instead of a whole week, you know, on that downward spiral of thinking, but that's an improvement, you know. And
mm-hmm.
then maybe some of the minor ones, just, you know, you might be upset for 3 minutes instead of 5 minutes. Well, there you go. That's, you know, that's that much less time churning and spewing ego's you know, wickedness and you know, vitriolic insanity, and and instead choosing the peace that's behind that, that's waiting patiently for us to choose that thought system instead.
Right. Well, I realize we're coming to the end of our time, and I want to make sure that you have time to make any announcements that you'd like to.
I do have one, in fact.
Okay. I know you've got some stuff coming up.
Yeah. And this is going to be a particularly fun one, I think. And again, with full awareness that we can use any specific to look at our investment in. But you know, having said that, I'm participating, and also happen to be the webmaster for a new website that's weekendoffreedomretreat.org. If you want to go there while we're talking. And this is actually about an event. This is the fifth annual one. I wasn't involved in the previous four, but will be with this next one in Estes Park, Colorado, coming this June, in the 16th through the 19th of 2016 here this year. If you're happening to listen to the recording, it's happening in 2016 in June. It's called Weekend of Freedom Retreat, but it's actually 4 days. It's the 16th, from the afternoon of the 16th, which is a Thursday, through early Sunday afternoon on the 19th of June. And a really wonderful lineup. Gary Renard and Cindy Laura Renard are going to be there, along with David Hoffmeister and Dove Fishman and Lori Coburn and Craig Villarubia. And Craig has been one of the principals in the Miracle Share virtual conference for the last couple of years that I've participated in, and had great fun with that. It's just a wonderful online venue for a conference. This is an actual, you know, show up in the dream of a person type conference, though. And then Maria Felipe is another presenter. I just did an interview with her, and I've been posting these video conversations on the website. So if you want to watch any of those, they're all there. And I'm doing another one with one of the organizers tomorrow, Barrett Hedin and Cheryl Kaplan, who's the one who started the whole thing. So anyway, it's going to be a whole lot of fun. It's not going to be just people standing at podiums kind of thing. We're actually steering it more and more toward an interactive format, where there may be short presentations, but there's going to be a lot of time devoted to roundtable conversations and interaction. And the venue is particularly gorgeous. I've been to Estes Park several times, and it's a beautiful area. I actually haven't been to the YMCA of the Rockies, where it's being held, myself, but I've talked to people who have been, and they rave about it. Apparently there's swimming and lots of hiking and tons of outdoor activities. And so you can actually, bring your family and friends and make an extended vacation on either side of it or within it, kind of thing. And because your family, if you were doing that sort of thing, would have plenty to do there. And it's right at the back door of Rocky Mountain National Park, which is gorgeous, of course.
Yeah, phenomenal.
So anyway, the website is weekendoffreedomretreat.org. And I hope to see you there if you happen to be listening. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So that's my announcement du jour. And I've also been posting those videos in addition to the weekendoffreedomretreat.org on ACIM blog as well. So.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, CA. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a great conversation. And everybody, you can also find Bruce at www.acimblog.com. So I'd like to thank Bruce and the listeners and everybody in the chat room. And I'd like to thank our producer, Scott Weaver, and encourage everybody to stay tuned, because up next is The Through Line with Christine Dumaurier on Fabulous Fridays here on 1-2 Radio. So until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Bruce Rawls, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about holiness.